With the $5 meal deal at McDonald's, five hits different. Five gets you a McDouble or McChicken and a small fry and a small drink and a four-piece McNuggets. Five gets you more at McDonald's. Prices and participation may vary for limited time only.
Hey, Locksmiths. Friend of the show and our Check the Locks Halloween episode co-host Jessica Gomez has written a dark thriller novel called Pieces of You. This creepy but emotional tale of grief, abduction, and murder is Mayor of Easttown meets Psycho, and it's perfect for all of you who love crime stories.
Nora Aberdeen, a grieving college dropout, ventures to a deteriorating small town to meet a blind date. On her drive home, a bloody young woman darts in front of her car, causing Nora to veer off the road and headfirst into a tree. When Nora regains consciousness, the woman is gone. Nora's estranged uncle, a sheriff's deputy, comes calling with information about a growing list of young women turning up dead in the small town of Woodbridge, including the woman who caused Nora's accident. The local police have written the women off as drug overdoses, but suspicious circumstances and the department's ineptitude point to something more nefarious. Unsure if she can trust the only family she has left, Nora tries to uncover the secrets of the missing young women and her connection to them when a strange motive unfurls. Will Nora uncover the truth before the killer claims another victim?
Pieces of You by Jessica Gomez releases October 1st. Pre-order as a hardcover, paperback, or ebook online at Barnes & Noble, Target, Amazon, bookshop.org, or ask your local bookstore to order it for you. Sign up for Jessica's newsletter at writerjessicagomez.com and follow her on Instagram at writerjessicagomez for updates.
I'm Jamie Beebe.
And I'm Jake Deptula. We're the host of the Strictly Stalking podcast.
Strictly Stalking is a true crime podcast that explores stalking stories told by the survivors in their own words.
Join us every Tuesday as we interview survivors, advocates, and experts to give you a deep dive into the workings of a stalking case.
Would you know where to turn if you or someone you know is being stalked? We'll also give you the resources to fight back, know your rights, and get justice.
Find Strictly Stalking wherever you listen to podcasts, from Podcast One.
I got out of the shower as I was cleaning off the mirror, and I saw fingers pushing through my window.
He looked very demonic, and he said in like a really scruffy voice, he said, "Hey."
I headed up that way, and my dog barked, and I looked over, and he was probably 20 feet away from me, walking straight towards me.
He used her phone after he had killed her to add me on Facebook.
Warning, Check the Locks podcast is a true crime podcast and may contain graphic descriptions of violence, murder, sexual assault, and more. Check the Locks podcast is not appropriate for all listeners. Listener discretion is strongly advised.
Welcome back to Check the Locks podcast. As always, I'm John Connor.
I'm Olivia Cornu.
Saying thank you for joining us this week as we dive into yet another truly terrifying true crime case. Before we get started, as always, Olivia, it's wonderful to see you. How are you? How has your week been?
My week was good this week. It's Sunday. Nothing too exciting. How was you? Y'all had a busy weekend, I hear.
Yeah, we went on a 3-mile hike on Saturday, and it was like 100 degrees outside, which, you know, normally not my bag, but I had a really good time. We went with some friends, and we took Millie and one of her friends, and we got to a part where it was like a straight uphill incline, and I looked back and both of those kids were just like, you could see it on their face. It was like, oh no, you know what I mean? And so we started going, and this little girl that was with us, like, she started crying and she was like, my legs hurt. I walked around the fair all day on Friday. So she was having a really hard time. And, you know, all the parents were like, come on, let's go. They were making their way ahead. So I was like, let's turn it into a game. So I came up with this whole thing about how we were in like the fairy woods and there was a lava monster. We had to get out of the fairy woods before it got dark so that the lava monster didn't get us. And I was playing monster sound effects on my iPhone and like, all right, look out, watch out for the tree stump. This is a big jump, like kind of pumping them up a little bit. And
yeah,
luckily we made it out. But there was a moment there I was like, these kids might be living in these woods. So, but it was good. It was a lot of fun. And Millie was really proud of herself. That's the longest kind of like nature hike that she's done. So she,
that's far. You know,
yeah. She woke up this morning and was like, Dad, I can't believe I hiked 3 miles yesterday. She was just super amped on it. So
that's it was awesome. Good.
Yeah. And then today we had fish tacos at Kara's mom's house. So that was really nice. And
nice.
Got to hang out. So it's been a pretty good weekend. The only thing that has kind of sucked, and I don't know if you have this going on, but we have an air quality alert going on right now.
Is it the Sahara and dirt?
I guess, man. But like all three of us have just been kind of stuffy and dry. You know, we're outside today. It's just like, so I apologize if you're listening. I'm, you know, sounding stuffy or anything like that. It's just that air quality alert. But
that poor air quality will get you every time.
Well, I've got asthma. You know, I got the nerdy kid asthma. So, you know, it gets me a little bit harder than everybody else. But yeah, you know, like I said, it's just like dry and kind of, you know, you just feel stuffed up, but it's not productive. You know what I mean? So it's, I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's gross. I apologize. But I am super glad that we are together, that we're recording. I know you have some camping plans coming up for the holiday as well. So, you know, good things coming, good things happening. But this week, I know I sent you my notes. You got a chance to go through it. Anything sound familiar to you? Anything like that? Or, you know, what we're about to dive into, does it look a little fresh to you?
Nope. I was just kind of thinking, do I know this case? And I haven't ever heard of it. So I'm interested to hear it.
Yeah, I'll tell you, I know we were talking before the podcast, but as I was researching it, I was like, have I done this case before? I was like, I really hope I'm not spending all this time and doing a case that like we've already done. But something about it just for some reason felt super familiar. And then in my head, I was like, I'm pretty sure I watched like a documentary or something like this online. So again, if you're listening to this and somehow you're like, hey, it was this episode, I definitely apologize. I don't think that's the case, but I'm just giving you a little bit of a giving a little preamble in the beginning, being like, hey, if we did this before, I don't mean to. And hopefully there's something new in there, but I don't think it'll be an issue. I just, you know, want to kind of give the disclaimer up front.
That happens to me all the time. I feel like there's so many times where I just want to text you and be like, have we done this case? Because I feel like a lot of times they just kind of all kind of start to sound familiar. And then me, knows that one day I'm going to do the same case you did. And I did the short on time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So for the listeners, I don't think we shared this, but, you know, when Olivia had COVID and then she was traveling, she had gotten back and she was, you know, Olivia was like, hey, I'm going to go ahead and just knock out an episode and I'll be all set and ready, good ready to go. And she sent me her notes and it was one of the episodes that I actually did while she was out of town. So I was like, well, got to do a different one. So
got to do another one. But after 2.5 years, it's only been one time.
Yeah. So.
And in my defense, I didn't hear the case.
No. Hey, you know, crossing our fingers, it's only that one time, but it's just fun because, like you said, a lot of the stuff just kind of, you know,
it just runs together a little.
Yeah. You know, and
we read a lot.
Yeah. And a lot of times, you know, victimology is the same. And I mean, I guess that's why there's a whole science behind, you know, like learning these kinds of people and stuff like that. Yeah. But, well
anyways.
Know, yeah. I've been talking. So what do you say? Should we just quit the Gabby, get to the Stabby, break down this week's episode?
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's do it. For this week's case, we're going to Texas in 1997. 12-year-old Laura Smither was living in the town of Friendswood. Laura was a bright and gifted student who was also a Girl Scout. She had dreams of becoming a ballerina, and on the morning of April 3rd, her parents were making pancakes for breakfast. Laura asked her mother if she could go out for a jog before the family ate, and her mother, Gay, said yes. But Laura never came home. Her parents called the police and reported Laura missing. And by sundown, the police and members of the community began searching for the 12-year-old. Volunteers passed out flyers and helicopters flew overhead, searching from the air. Guards from a local prison even volunteered to search rural areas. But sadly, there was no sign of Laura Smither. But the search party kept at it. 17 days later, Bob and Gay Smither's worst fear would become a reality. On April 20th, a father and son were out walking their dog near a retention pond roughly 12 miles from the Smither home. And it was there that the pair made a terrifying discovery. In a muddy area near the pond were the decomposed remains of 12-year-old Laura. The child's body had been left in the water for weeks, which made it nearly impossible to determine a cause of death. The loss of Laura Smither was devastating to both her family and the community. But sadly, it was only the beginning. Only a few months later, on July 15th, 20-year-old Kelly Cox was taking a tour of the Denton, Texas Police Department. Kelly was a student at the University of Northern Texas, and she was on the tour for a criminal justice class. She was a dedicated student who had been taking summer courses in hopes of graduating with her social work degree early. Along with being a student, Kelly was also a mother, and her toddler, Alexis, was her whole world. Now, Kelly had to leave the tour early to take an exam, but when she tried to get into her car, she realized that she was locked out. Kelly walked to a nearby gas station to use a payphone. She called her boyfriend and asked him to come pick her up. But when he arrived, Kelly was nowhere to be found. And when she failed to pick up Alexis from daycare later that day, Kelly's mother, Jan, knew something was very wrong, and she immediately reported her daughter missing. But the police struggled to find any leads, and the case would begin to grow cold. Now, only 11 days later, on July 26th, another young woman would go missing. While on patrol, an officer spotted an abandoned white Dodge Neon at a car wash in Bethany, Oklahoma. It would later be determined that the vehicle belonged to Tiffany Johnston. Johnston was 19 years old and had been married for 3 months. While at the car wash, she seemed to vanish without a trace. Her floor mats were left hanging to dry and the keys were still in the ignition. And when questioned by investigators, witnesses shared that they had seen nothing out of the ordinary. Tragically, Johnson's body would be found the next day. Her remains had been dumped near an unpaved rural road close to the interstate. She was partially clothed and left in the tall grass. It was later determined that Tiffany had been strangled and sexually assaulted. But this time, detectives caught a break. They were able to obtain a DNA sample from Tiffany's body. However, they couldn't develop a complete profile at the time, and again, Tiffany's case would grow cold. 3 weeks later, on August 17, 1997, Jessica Kane was last seen leaving a restaurant in Clear Lake, Texas. Jessica was a 17-year-old high school student who was getting ready to start college. She was also a talented stage actor. And on the 17th, she had been at the restaurant for a cast party after a performance. But by 2:30 in the morning, Jessica had failed to return home, and her mother, Susie, began to worry. So she woke up her husband, C.H. Kane, and sent him out to look for their daughter. Now, while driving around, C.H. discovered Jessica's white pickup truck abandoned on the side of the highway just miles from their home. Again, police quickly set up a command center and began searching for the teenager. Then, for the first time, there would be a connection between the cases. You see, Bob and Gay Smither heard about Jessica's disappearance, and having lived through those same terrible feelings and still processing the loss of their own child, the couple volunteered to help search for the Kane's daughter. They would later say that feeling the need to help was a call from God. However, despite a massive search and televised plea for her return, Jessica's case went cold. But it would be an event that happened during the middle of these cases that would finally point to a suspect. So before we go any further, Olivia, where's your head at? What are you thinking about this case so far?
I don't really know what I think just yet. There's obviously going to be some connection because they're all young women. They're all going missing in a same similar fashion. But I just don't know, like, is it like a physical thing? Is it what the women look like? Do they all have like the same color hair, same stature? Or is it just like he sees these young women driving and Like, how did he get Jessica out of her truck? You know, like she was just pulled over on the side of the road.
Yeah, I mean, when I was researching the case, I know I had a lot of those same similar questions where it's like, just how, you know what I mean? How can four women, I mean, you know, and I say women and, you know, we're looking at teenagers, young, 20,
yeah, like older, you know, teenagers,
poor Laura, young women. Yeah, poor Laura is only 12 years old. You know what I mean?
Right, but, right.
You know, how do people just kind of vanish like that with nobody seeing anything? You know, and then I think about their families and I think about, you know, Bob and Gay Smith are hurting so badly from losing their child, but still showing up to help the Canes look for theirs. You know what I mean? I'm just like,
yeah,
that takes crazy internal strength to be like, you know, I know what this feels like, so I'm going to go be there for somebody else. So I thought that was really, really brave of them to do. And I was like, oh man, that's like, that's real inspiring. Like out of tragedy to still be able to pull together to be like, I'm going to do something to help somebody else, you know?
Yeah. In hopes that they don't have the same outcome.
Yeah, because I can't imagine. I know we'll talk about it at the end, but like, you know, I can't imagine. Like I said, you know, we've talked about it before, but you're not supposed to outlive your child. You're not supposed to see the end of their story. So right. When that happens, it's got to just be earth shattering, you know. And like I've said before, like I feel like knowing myself, I'd probably want to crawl into a hole and hide away. So these people are really inspirational to be like, no, we're going to help this other family because, like you said, hopefully they won't have to hurt like we did, you know?
Yeah, and this is just a few weeks apart. It's not like it's a year, 2 years, you know? It's a short period of time.
Yeah, I'm right there with you.
So it's very courageous and thoughtful, you know?
Yeah, and I'm right there with you. I totally agree where, you know, as I'm going through, it's like, man, this is one after another, after another, after another. And so, you know, whatever was going on with this person, it feels like it's escalating and moving very quickly, you know? And so I can imagine that entire area of the country was probably like, what the hell is going on? You know?
Yeah. A little on edge for sure. Well, let's keep going. I want to hear more.
Okay. So now we're going to go back just a few months. On May 17th, 1997, 19-year-old Sandra Sepas stopped at a convenience store near I-45 in Webster, Texas. While walking across the parking lot, she noticed a man staring at her, and it made her feel uneasy. While in the store, Sandra called a friend and asked them to meet at a Waffle House across the street. She then walked back out to the car and began to drive across the road to the restaurant. But while doing so, she noticed that she had a flat tire. Once she pulled in, the man from the store parking lot approached the car, and he offered to assist Sandra with her flat. The 19-year-old agreed. The man asked Sandra to grab a rag off the passenger seat of his truck, and when she went to retrieve it, he attacked her from behind. Holding a knife, he told Sandra that if she didn't do what he said, he would kill her. The man forced Sepa into his truck and began driving north on I-45, all while trying to sexually assault the teenage girl. But Sandra made a decision in that moment. She was not going to be her attacker's victim. And in a brave move, she opened the car door and leapt from the vehicle. Sandra would sustain substantial injuries, but she survived. A passerby would see what happened and stop to help, returning to the Waffle House where an employee made a call to 911. Now, on that call, the employee explained what happened and gave operators a description of Sandra's attacker, a white male in his 30s with blonde hair and a beard. And when police interviewed Sandra, she would also describe the man's truck. Now, in September of 1997, Webster police were meeting with Friendswood's police. Remember, Friendswood is where 12-year-old Laura Smither had been abducted. While talking, they learned that the Friendswood police had a suspect shortly after Laura's disappearance. His name was William Reese. Reese was a divorced truck driver and construction worker. In the 1980s, he had served prison time for two rapes and a kidnapping. And at the time of Laura Smithers' disappearance, he was working a construction job down the street from their home. Now, he was interviewed and given a polygraph test, but Friendswood police didn't have enough evidence to implicate Reese in Laura's disappearance. So they had to cut him loose. But something stood out to the Webster detectives. The description of Reese's truck shared by the Friendswood PD. It sounded an awful lot like the description Sandra Sapaw gave of her attacker's vehicle. Because of this, Webster police picked up William Reese and brought him in for a lineup. And Sandra identified him as her kidnapper instantly. Reese would be arrested and charged with aggravated kidnapping. His trial would begin on April 29, 1998. The jury would hear Sandra share her terrifying story, and Reese's past came back to haunt him, with his victims from the 80s taking the stand and sharing how they were brutally attacked in Oklahoma. In the end, the jury would deliberate for less than 3 hours before finding William Reese guilty. He would be sentenced to 60 years in prison for his attack on Sandra Sipa. But the families of Laura Smither, Kelly Cox, Tiffany Johnston, and Jessica Kane still deserve justice. And sadly, their cases were cold. Or at least they were. In 2012, the Oklahoma State Bureau of Investigations decided to reopen Tiffany Johnston's case. Now, the case files showed that William Reese was a potential suspect, but again, there wasn't enough evidence. And the OSBI's investigation didn't turn up any new information, but it did revisit an old piece of evidence. The DNA sample recovered from Tiffany's body. And when they tested the sample against Reese's DNA, it was a match. Investigators were also able to build a timeline that showed Reese's whereabouts at the time of the murder. They used gas station receipts, calling cards, and more to establish a history of his movements, not only at the time Tiffany was murdered, but during the time the other victims disappeared as well. Using this information and the threat of the death penalty for Tiffany's murder, investigators sat down with Reese, hoping he would talk. They laid out photos of Tiffany, Kelly, Laura, and Jessica. And when confronted with the images, William Reese indicated that he was responsible for their murders. He agreed to lead investigators to the bodies of the missing victims on one condition, that Texas did not pursue the death penalty charge against him. And prosecutors agreed after speaking with the families. It was then that Reese shared his dark secrets. The remains of Jessica Kane were found near an airport after 25 days of digging. Kelly Cox would be found in Brazoria County. She was wearing a bracelet that her mother Jan would later have turned into a locket, finally having answers about what happened to her daughter and Alexis's mother. Now, in May of 2021, William Reese was transported back to Oklahoma to face the charges of kidnapping and murder for Tiffany Johnston, during which Sandra Sapaw would again take the stand, sharing her story of survival with the jury. The trial took only 9 days, and after 2 hours of deliberation, the Oklahoma jury sentenced William Reese to death. Then, in June of 2022, Reese pled guilty to the murder of Laura Smither, Kelly Cox, and Jessica Kane, and he was sentenced to an additional 3 life sentences. Now, today, Reese remains in prison, and he's currently attempting to appeal the Oklahoma death sentence. But for the family of Reese's victims, their pain never goes away. Though they receive justice in the courts, the loss of their loved ones will remain with them always. So, Olivia, that's this week's story. What are you thinking? Where's your head at?
This story is just so devastating. At the end of the day, I'm thankful that, you know, all the families were able to receive justice for their young daughters. And I'm glad that William Reese got caught, because that seems like somebody who was able to get away with it multiple times. And that's not to say he wouldn't do it several more times, you know, had he not been caught. But it's just really sad that just a lot of young lives were taken just by someone's perversions.
Yeah, 100%. And I'm with you. I do not think that, well, number one, I don't think he would have stopped. And number two, I think it would have just continued to escalate. because you see how quickly it was, literally like a month later, you know, 15 days later, 11 days later. So it's just, I don't know. It feels like this compulsion that he had, you know what I mean? To be like, okay, time for the next girl, time for the next girl, time for the next girl.
Right.
And they didn't really get into it. And I don't know if it's because he pled guilty, so they didn't really have to. But what it feels like to me, and again, this is just my thought based on going through it, but what it feels like to me was that was this thing, was like, oh, there's something wrong with the car. So, you know, Kelly Cox being locked out. Oh, like, hey, do you need help? Snatch her up. Or, you know, you had said, you know, how did he get Jessica out of the car? I'm wondering if they like, pulled up next to her. Hey, you know, yelling at her about something about her car, and then gets out to help and boom, like grabs her and goes, you know? So it's.
Yeah. Like, hey, you have a flat tire, you need to pull over, you know, and they're young. So who knows? And then just a young girl, Laura, out on a run, you know, just no big deal. She's a 12-year-old.
Yeah. You know, and like, I don't know, man, that's one of those things too. It's like when I was a kid, when I was 12, I could leave and go wherever, you know,
we were all through the neighborhood on our bikes.
You know, nobody knew where you were. There was no Find My iPhone. It was just, you know, go do whatever. And now as a parent, I'm like, I'd be real like hesitant to be like, yeah, 12 years old, be like, yeah, just go out anywhere by yourself. And you know what I mean? Like, I'd be like, yeah, turn on your Find My iPhone or, you know, whatever.
Right. Call me when you
family
get there.
Life 360 or whatever it is you use, you know what I mean? So I can see where you're at, you know, but I don't know, man, it's just heartbreaking to think like how so many families in such a short time were shattered. You know, it's just so much hurt and grief in a couple of months. And like, thank God Sandra Sapak came forward and, you know, was able to pick him out of the lineup. And I don't know, like I said, I just, you know, I don't know what would have happened if he wouldn't have been caught and was able to keep going, but I have a feeling it would have been, you know, absolutely terrible.
Yeah, she is very brave. She was able to tell her story on multiple occasions and pick out her attacker. And that just takes a lot of bravery and just strength to talk about that.
Yeah. And I mean, pardon my language, but she got fucked up. Like, she jumped out of that car on the interstate. Yep. Like, can you imagine doing like 60, 70 and like, you're like, well, I mean, you know, I'm definitely not going out like this. So, you know what I mean? Like, I'm out. And just thankfully she lived. But like, I just, oh my God, thinking about how bad that would hurt, you know what I mean? And then to be brave enough to testify against the guy twice. You know, it's like doing all that work to help other families be able to start that healing process and get closure and know that the person who did it is, you know, being held responsible. I was like, it's just so, so brave.
Yeah. Well, it was definitely a hard case to listen to. It was sad and just heartfelt at the same time. And I'm just glad that they all got justice.
Yeah. 110%. But if we're talking deadbolt tests for something like this, where does a case like this fall for you? I think I might know a range. I feel like it's going to be kind of high, but maybe I'm wrong. So what do you got?
I'm going with a 9.
Is it kind of because, and again,
it could
this
be
is just,
me.
Okay. That's what I was wondering. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I've been stranded on the side of the interstate with a flat tire before working, you know, and have no one to help me, and the DOT doesn't help because I'm technically off the interstate, but right there, you know, so I've been that person before, and now I'm like aware enough, I think. But even if someone three times my size came and attacked me, like I'm strong, but I don't know that I think I would be more defenseless than anything.
Yeah. Like so, when I was,
yeah, it's a 9.
Yeah. When I was researching this, I couldn't help but thinking, so there was a time where Kara was driving home on the interstate and a semi truck just decided it was going to change lanes and hit her and like from the side and just shot her off the interstate. So she was just in the grass and luckily she was okay. But like in my head, it was like, you know, I could see somebody just rolling up and be like, hey, do you need help? Is everything okay? You know, and if that's the wrong person, you know, And in that moment, like, you're frazzled. Like, I'm sure if somebody was like, you know, oh, your tire is flat. If you're a 19-year-old girl.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, thanks. You know, I would for sure.
Yeah. Oh, please. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. It's just hard. I mean, I think for me, especially being like, you know, a father and a husband, this is a 9 for me as well. Because, you know, like I said, my wife drives in towards the Nashville area for work every day. Like, you know, I do believe if somebody was like, hey, you know, like, your tire's flat or whatever, she would, you know, probably pull off to see what was going on. That she does have the wherewithal, I think, to be like, I'm going to get to someplace safe and then pull off and look. Yeah,
now we do. But at that age, I mean, still at this age, but like, we have more of our whereabouts around us, but it's still just, it's unsettling because it almost makes you feel like you can't trust anybody, which is also not of like my character. And so to have that feeling of like, man, you're probably like harmless and really can help me, but like, I have this sense of we live in this world and I can't trust you, like judgment. And it's uncomfortable to feel that way all the time.
Yeah. Like, you want to believe that people are, you know, inherently still good.
Yeah.
But,
but are you going to kidnap me?
Yeah. And I definitely think doing the show doesn't help.
No.
To ease any of those fears. You know what I mean? But like,
zero.
That's the thing with, you know, with Millie. It's like, when she gets old enough, and that's part of the thing too with kids, right? Like, kids get older and they're, you know, they should be able to go out and explore the world and they, you know, should be able to try these things and stuff like that. But, you know, as a parent, you're just thinking about the vulnerabilities and the fact that they don't know enough about the world yet to keep those guards up. And you can try, mm-hmm. you know, but like, you know, someone like Laura, right? Like, she's 12. Even if she had her guard up and was like, this William Reese seems like scary, I shouldn't talk to him, you know, something like that. If he gets his hands on her, there's nothing she can do.
Right.
You know, and I think that's, you know, that's absolutely terrifying to me, is that there are people out there who would leverage that and be like, yeah, well, now I've got you in your mind and we're on the interstate heading somewhere and you're never going to see anybody you love again, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't know. I found it really interesting when I was researching it, and, you know, I guess I was right about how you would feel about it.
Usually if it's young girls getting kidnapped, it's kind of high for me.
Yeah, we can put it up there. Well, that is where we fall in the deadbolt test. Olivia and I are both coming in. We're tied at 9s, but as always, we want to hear from the listeners, from our locksmiths. Where does the murderer William Reese fall on your deadbolt test? You can let us know. Reach out to us on Instagram at Check the Locks Pod. Find us on Twitter at Check the Locks. And if you're not in our Facebook group, come hang out with us. We would love to get to spend some time with you, hang out, get to know you a little bit better. Really just, you know, get the chance to virtually party with you a little bit. So come hang out. If you'd like to join, there is a link to the group in the description of the episode that you're listening to now. Olivia, we love hearing from our fans. We love hearing what people think. And, you know, we always want those reviews. We want emails. We want all that stuff. So if somebody wants to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, what is the best way to do that?
Well, they need to hop over to the Apple Podcast app, go to our show's homepage, scroll down where you see all 5 stars, click all 5 stars, and leave us a little review and tell us what you think about Check the Locks Podcast.
Yeah, and Olivia always says it best, so I don't have to. Apple Podcasts, leave the review. If you need a cheat code, there's a link in the description to this episode. Again, we just want to hear from you. What do you think? What do you like? Did we miss something? Do we need to add something? We'd just really like to hear what you think. Also, if you're not an Apple Podcast listener, you can leave comments on Spotify episodes now as well. So we would love to hear from you there. Additionally, we're always taking email. You can reach out at contact@checkthelockspod.com. Leave us any feedback, again, what you like, what you don't like, you know, what we should do, what we shouldn't do. We want to hear it all. And of course, we love
voicemails.
They're your favorite thing, right?
My favorite thing. We need a voicemail. It's been a long time. It's been months.
It's been a hot minute. Yeah. So we would definitely like, you know, to hear your voice, what you think. You know, it's always cool to be able to hear, you know, directly from you. And get to kind of put a voice to the name and things like that. So if you'd like to leave us a voicemail, head over to checkthelockspod.com. Click the little voicemail icon. You can leave us a voicemail. And Olivia, I don't think I told you this, but I'm actually working on an easier way to do that. Hopefully I'll be able to announce some more information soon. But I'm working on getting us like a straight up phone number. where you can just call and be like, hey, here's my voicemail.
So people can just call and chat.
Yeah. Just call, leave a voicemail. I'm just going to send them your mom's number. She can take the message.
She could do it in her free time.
Yeah. But also look out for that, folks, because hopefully we'll be launching that very soon as well. So we just want to hear from you, hear what you think, and again, get your input, because you are the reason that we do this show. So obviously we want to hear from you. So again, reach out to us, smoke signals, telegrams, however you want to do it, but we'd love to hear from you. And as always, if you like the show, you want to financially support what we do, you can do so by becoming a patron. Head over to patreon.com/Chet the Lox, get signed up today. We got a lot of great tiers, exclusive benefits, stickers, coffee mugs, all sorts of stuff you can only get for being a patron. Plus, you get the episodes commercial free. So if you love Chet the Lox, but you hate those ads, Patreon is the way to go. So again, you want to help us out, you want to help us keep the lights on, that is patreon.com/Chet the Lox, get signed up today. And if you can't financially support the show, we definitely understand. Just listening, hanging out with us, sharing what we do with your friends and family, the people who are important to you, means just as much, if not more, right? So that's how a podcast grows. You tell people to listen who haven't listened, and then they find it and they share it as well, right? It's about that, again, kind of local homegrown growth. It's going to help us find new listeners, bring new people in the family. So if that's what you're doing, you're helping to promote the show, just know that we appreciate you more than we could ever tell you. That's all that we have for this week's case, but please make sure that you are subscribed to Chet the Lox on your favorite podcast app so that you never miss an episode. We will see you again next week with another truly terrifying true crime case. But until then, don't forget to
Chet the Lox.
See you next week.